others have been stuck in traffic and the misfortunes of what we face. So I would plead for your intervention in terms of the classification which they will join us. We don't want to push without a number of them helping first swearing and so our apologies for such. Thank you very much. Just the coffee for the passage. Feel free to grab your own cup of coffee while you are waiting. Thank you very much.
Okay, but just give you coffee.
They are arriving at this point, after having gone to various affected municipalities and entities, for them having been informed about their own outcomes, for them to open up into certain outcomes, various provinces having been met, the premiers, departments, culture, and the legislature. Meaning, therefore, from June, which is the end of the financial year 2022, after that audit, which has ended somewhat December, January, the Auditor General has advised those who are in an informing way part of that accountability ecosystem, which she would emphasize for our own benefit and the benefit of the country as a whole, as to how those 257 municipalities have performed in their own entity. From our part, I think we to somewhat upfront appreciate the AG for that commitment and the fact that she has meant to meet the required deadline in terms of the plan and the audit plan, which has realized the fact that now the report has been finalized, it must be somewhat taken. We are going to give over to the Auditor General as the only item that we have today is the presentation by the AG on the MFMA findings for the year 2021-2022. Over to you, AG. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning to yourself and to the Honourable members of SOAS. And thank you for the opportunity to share with you the report that the National Audit Office has prepared and completed our 2022 audit for local government. As you indicated, this report deals with the audit for the year ended on the 30th of June 2022. It covers the 257 municipalities, as well as...
A bit louder, please, Chair.
Yeah, I'll go. You can hear.
Can I speak a bit louder? Does that help? Okay, all right. I'll raise my voice somewhat. Thank you all for that question. Thank you. I was saying that this report covers the 257 municipalities that we audited, as well as 30 public agencies in the municipal state. So really, our audit insights are covering a total of 318 audits. The audit has been completed, the annual report tabled in the different councils, including our audit report. We engage with the provincial leaders in each of the provinces. We've also taken the time to meet with the executive and the administrative leaders in the local government, in the national sphere of government that are responsible for the local government run as well. This GR has been compiled after many, many hours of toil by Team ADSA, the formidable Team ADSA, and it is an absolute privilege for me to table it on their behalf today. It comprises a detailed analysis of our work, the recommendations that we issue, as well as key commitments made by the different role players in the ecosystem of accountability. The GR is available in physical form to the members of the committee at this moment, and it will be available later today in electronic form on our website and our social media platform. We aim to have this as a contribution of our insights into local government, seen through the eyes of the public sector auditor. And we aim for it to be a source of information, but also inspiration for all involved to act on improving municipalities and municipal entities. Honourable Chair, the next slide is one that we share everywhere we go, so it reminds not just us, but all of our...
Recording in progress.
This slide reminds all of our receptive audiences of the constitutional mandate that the office has to audit independently on how public finances have been managed, and to provide this independent assurance on how each and every public institution that has access to the public purse is managing those finances. In everything we do, we aim to ensure that we enable oversight, we enable transparency and accountability. And whether it's through the audits themselves, through the insights as we're sharing today, whether it's our elevated focus on the lived reality of citizens that are being served by public institutions, and whether it's also in terms of issuing the material irregularities, all of that work is about ensuring that we are enabling oversight and governance. Thank you. I'm benefiting from a skill transfer in motion. Thank you, Chair. The next slide deals with the accountability ecosystem, for which we have shared every time we have spoken about our new approach to auditing and dealing with audit insights. For we firmly believe that every single public institution has within itself key players with different roles that are given to them, which if those role players effectively execute on their mandate, we will see a step change in accountability and in the performance of government institutions. If every single public official, senior manager, internal audit committee, accounting officer acts in accordance with their responsibilities as given in law, we'll be able to see a step change. If every single mayor, speaker, MPAC, or councillor actually deals with their responsibilities in a way that's given in law, we'll be able to drive improvements in the level of transparency and accountability. We don't only look at what happens within one public institution, we look across the system and see whom are the other role players in the different spheres of government that ought to be supporting improvements in accountability. And here, we've taken the time to share our insights with every single player outside of a municipality as well. We've looked at the provincial leadership, especially the role of the department responsible for local government, the COPTIS. We've also looked at the role of the Premier as well as the role of the provincial treasury. We've also seen ourselves with some analysis of the role that the provincial legislature must play in improving accountability. And at the national level, we spend time understanding the role of the national treasury, the role of the national COPTIS, and ensuring that we spend time with them, giving them insights and influencing the choices they make so that ultimately we do get the type of improvement we see. And that is why, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, our report doesn't focus on local government as a sphere that stands alone, but it deals with what happens across the ecosystem of accountability. We're able to do this because at ADSA, we audit pretty much every single player given our mandate, and we have the ability and the reach to drive insights and influence and ultimately even use our enforcement tools to get them all to contribute better so that the entire system starts to make a shift in the level of performance, the level of coordination as well, ultimately for the benefit of citizens. Allow me now to get to the outcomes now, and I'm sure you're all very keen to hear how local government has performed on audits for the year ended 2022. On the next slide, you'll see the top row that deals with the outcome for the year that ended in 2021. And that is the set of outcomes that we shared with you when we tabled the report on the 15th of June last year. And at the time, we had 9 audits still outstanding, and we showed that we had 41 clean audits, 100 unqualified, 78 qualified, 4 adverse, and 25 defamed audits. Since then, there have been some submissions and completions of 6 audits, and so we've updated the opening balance for 2021. So the middle row gives you an update of where things stand for 2021 since we were able to complete the 6 audits. One of them ended up as a disclaimer, and hence you've got 26 disclaimers as a comparator for 2022, and then you've also got the other 5 ending up in the qualified zone. In terms of 2022 itself, I'd like you to please focus on the bottom row. we have in this year the outcome for local government that look as follows. 38 clean audits, meaning that on a net basis, there has been a reduction in the number of clean audits. And I think it's important to spend some time just reminding each other on what actually comprises the clean audits. Our audits cover three critical areas: credibility of financial information, the usefulness and reliability of performance information, as well as matters related to compliance. And when an audit has got three ticks in each of those areas, they get what we term a clean audit, being an unqualified opinion on their financial statements, a tick on usefulness and reliability of their performance information, and there have been no material findings on compliance. Those three areas, if you look at them carefully, they really should be the minimum standard for every public institution, because every single public institution should be able to demonstrate that at the end of the year they can publish credible set of financial statements. And they don't get there just by attending to audit matters at the end of the year. They have to get there by establishing key controls throughout the year, proper monitoring discipline, key oversight measures to ensure that they've got credible information throughout the course of the year. And that's important because it enables those that run that municipality to have the type of information that allows them to make quality decisions as the year proceeds. If they don't have those disciplines, they're able to manage the affairs of the institution in the way that the law requires and in the way that good governance would demand. If you look at the matters of compliance, every single public institution should have in its makeup key procedures, policies, and disciplines to ensure that they operate within the rule of law as they're dealing with public policy. Where there are critical findings in this area, it tells you that those controls are not working as designed. And so those disciplines should be the minimum standards for every single public institution. If you look at the matter of performance information, every single public institution should have in its makeup key controls for proper planning for performance, for monitoring performance every single period, whether it's monthly or quarterly, and key controls for reporting faithfully on how they performed in accordance with their mandate and given function. If they don't have that, then they're able to confirm that they've been able to perform in line with their service delivery mandate. Again, that should be the bare minimum that we expect of every single public institution. So we have 38 clean audits this year. The next category deals with 104 unqualified on financial statements, but problems on performance and compliance. This role is a potentially dangerous one, because what it does is many auditees become complacent when they get a report that says your financial statements are credible, and then they largely ignore the matters around compliance and performance information. It's also very dangerous because it marks the idea that finances are not being managed during the course of the year. And we say that quite clearly because when we arrive for audit, it is evident that the key disciplines for financial management are not there during the year. People produce financial statements for audit purposes right at the end of the year. It's also very dangerous because that complacency easily allows people to slip back into the more undesirable audit category. No less than 16 auditees moved backwards into the qualified space and some into adverse this year. So it should worry us when there's complacency of people sitting in this particular category. 78 are those with qualified audit opinions in that their financial statements are not credible to be relied upon for key decision makers during the course of the year and beyond. 6 adverse, one of the metros in fact sits with an adverse audit opinion, the city of Tswana. We've got 15 disclaimers as things stand, and I say as things stand because there are a number of late submissions which I'll get to in a moment. What I do want to make the point of though now is that we've had a reduction in the number of disclaimers, which tells us that there are a number of leaders in local government and also in provincial government that are heeding our call to deal decisively with disclaimers. There's been at least 9 previous disclaimers that have moved out of that space, which demonstrates that with decisive action, it is possible to move out of the disclaimer zone, which is ever so undesirable. There are 16 outstanding audits at the end of the year. These are audits that we were unable to complete before we published this report. Much of this is due to late submission of financial statements. There is a good story lying underneath there, though, that I have to highlight. In the Northern Cape, and particularly in the Free State, at the end of last year, we highlighted that many councils had failed to submit their financials on time, if at all. And we also recommended that the provincial leadership support those municipalities to get their submissions in. There have been significant gains in this area, especially in the Free State, where the tone set by the provincial leadership has been about getting those financials in. So the backlog of financial statements that were not even there for 2021 and even 2020 is now being dealt with. So the OSH office is now dealing with those later submissions. So the delay in finalizing those orders actually highlights that there is a step change in the pace and the tendency to submit financials for audit. I have to give some context to the audit outcomes. So this year was a year of transition for many councils. It's the first year that they've really taken ownership of, being a financial year that started on the 1st of July 2021 and ended on the 30th of June 2020. In that transition, there was great instability in a number of auditees. A number of municipalities had councils that took some time to stabilize, and they also similarly had administrations that also took considerable periods to stabilize. So in this year of transition and instability, the ability to respond to audit findings and audit matters was really constrained. So I think we must look at these outcomes in that context. However, this instability and its impact on audit outcomes is also consistent with the type of impact on the actual service delivery at municipal level. It highlights that the deterioration of public institutions in the local government sphere unfortunately continues. When you've got this type of instability contributing in this way, it tells us that we have not yet institutionalized the key controls that make for strong administrations that perform consistently over different periods. Over many, many years now, local government institutions have continued to deteriorate, and the impact we see in their service delivery on the ground. We see it in the continued deterioration of infrastructure. We see it in the continued inability to put projects on the ground. We also see it in terms of the trust deficit that grows between local government and the citizens that they serve. So our major insight now, Chair, is that it is urgent that there be attention to building stronger institutions at local government level, and attention paid by those that have been elected and appointed to run those institutions, but also as a player in the accountability ecosystem. The next slide, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, gives you a sense of how the different categories of municipalities stack up on audit outcomes. You'll see that we've got two municipalities at the metro level that have got clean audits, and that is the City of Cape Town and the City of Ekurhuleni. Then you've got three with unqualified filings, two that are qualified, one adverse. Fortunately, no disclaimers at this level. The intermediate cities, which are the bigger towns and cities, their outcomes don't compare favorably to the rest of local government. We put up this slide to give you a sense of how each of the categories look. The major insights we would offer is that even those bigger cities that have access to bigger budgets and therefore have the ability to attract and retain professional talent and technical expertise, they are able to run their affairs in the way that is designed and acceptable from a governance level. So the process of sorting out the stability, the performance, the accountability within local government must look right across the board, local municipalities, district municipalities, inter-municipalities, and metro. The district municipalities should be doing much better, and they should be also setting the tone and example and offering support for local municipalities, but you don't see that. And as I say, the ones with the bigger budgets and the better location to access and retain talent are also not performing at the right level. The next slide, Honourable Chair, deals with the analysis of what each province looks like. We've had two provinces improve significantly, and that is KZN and the Eastern Cape. Maybe let me begin with the Eastern Cape. This province increased its audit outcomes quite significantly, with 8 going up and 4 going down. There is one delay in that there's an old clean audit from previous years that is in the process of a dispute resolution process, so we've not been able to complete that audit, and there were 2 that submitted late. However, the story of the Eastern Cape is one that says it's moving in the right direction. The concern, though, is that there isn't yet enough investment in stable, reliable controls at institutional level. So whilst there is movement in the level of support from the provincial government, whilst there may be some improvement in audit outcomes for specific municipalities, on the whole, you're not seeing a problem where there's enough investment in key controls. The Free State, I've indicated some of the insights on the Free State already around the shift in submission, which must be applauded because it seems like there's a different tone being set. Now there just needs to be much greater urgency in getting those municipalities to operate at the right level. The Free State is one of 2 provinces that has not seen a clear audit for many, many years. And so what you've got to do is start driving a different posture within the province, one that embraces the principles of good governance and sets the tone about the desirability of clean audits in that province. And in fact, if you move around the Free State, one can see the link between performance on audit outcomes and performance on delivery. In Gauteng, we've seen a deterioration in the outcomes in Gauteng. The province has really gone backwards, with only 2 clean audits this year and 4 regressions over the course of the year. Fortunately, there is now a different tone being set which reprioritizes good governance as well as the desirability of clean audits. In KZN, that's been a province that's been improving over a number of years now. That improvement now needs to translate into many more audits moving out of the unqualified space into the clean, and that will set a movement in the right direction. We have been encouraged by the ongoing and improved collaboration and coordination between provincial trade and provincial COPTA and the Office of the Premier to offer support into local government. Limpopo is a province that has been stagnant this year. Over many years, we have cautioned the Limpopo province about its ongoing reliance on consultants and on short-term measures to deal with audit matters. There has been great attraction in terms of support from the provincial government. In fact, with direct support from the provincial government, they've been able to move some of the disclaimers out of that zone. We would want to encourage the province to continue on that journey, but also to prioritize setting up strong, stable administration in the different municipalities. Limpopo is a province that has been stagnant for a number of years now. If you look at our PFMA outcomes and the local government, we've really told a similar story around Mpumalanga for a number of years now. It really hasn't moved in a good direction or in terms of the performance on audit outcomes. Unlike other provinces, in this particular one, we're not seeing the type of ownership by provincial government on the local government affairs. And we would want to encourage that province to prioritize that, as we've seen in other provinces as well. The Northern Cape, when we reported last year, we indicated that this province had struggled with a number of local government councils taking some time to stabilize following the election. And you still see this overhang in this particular performance here. So this province has gone backwards, unfortunately, and it needs to really prioritize stabilizing the political leadership and the administrative leadership as the children of different municipalities, and set the tone about what is expected in terms of good governance in those municipalities. The Northwest, one major improvement, but no clean audits, and that has been the case for a long time now. They've now dealt with a number of disclaimers and tried to get them out of that space. This is now through the support and the collaboration between provincial treasury and the provincial COFTA. In understanding where that promises, we take some encouragement from what we're seeing with better collaboration between those two players, plus the premiers of the Troika in that province is starting to operate in a much more cohesive way, which does give us hope that the province will move out of the space of things. As you can see, between the Northwest and the Northern Cape, they have the bulk of the disclaimer audit opinion. The Western Cape, with its 21 clean audits, retains this record as the biggest contributor to clean audits. Out of the 58 at the national level, 21 are in the Western Cape. Unfortunately, this province on a net basis have overcome backwards. There's been a number of regressions, and what we are seeing is that the impact of the instability at different councils, the changes at different councils, is translating into a deterioration in the ability to control how municipalities function and to meet the standards of good governance. And that is the story, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, on how each of the provinces look. The big summary I would offer is that there is a deterioration if you look right across the board. So even in those provinces where you've seen some improvement, there is concern that that improvement is not happening at the type of pace and with the type of impact that's required to stem the tide of deterioration of local government. We are taking some encouragement from the ownership that we're seeing being taken by provincial government. When we issued our report last year, you may recall that that was one of the key messages to say that provincial government must take responsibility for local government. And we've seen that shifting. And that does give us some encouragement that things will start to move in the right direction. I'd like to spend a bit of time now on financial management matters, just to drill down onto the first part of our audit, which is on the next slide. Financial planning is one of those areas that is crucial if a municipality is going to use the finances and resources it has to deliver on its mandate and function as given in law. Where there is poor planning, you then get weaknesses at the end of the year. Where there is also a combination of poor planning plus inadequate financial controls during the year, you then get problems at the audit phase when you're dealing with financial reports. And what we're seeing is that there continue to be poor planning in terms of how financial resources are going to be allocated. It starts with unfunded budgets. When you've got 44% of municipalities tabling and approving budgets that are unfunded, in that the revenues that they are aiming to collect are largely unrecoverable, and that is known at the beginning of the process of approving those unfunded budgets, they're then planning themselves into a financial deficit at the end of the year. You also see that there continues to be unauthorized expenditure in a number of municipalities, especially in the area of planning for non-cash items. By non-cash items, we're referring to those provisions that must be put in place in the budget to allow them to take account of the type of impairment of their financial, of their assets. So for example, depreciation or impairment of their infrastructure assets. They need to be able to account for that upfront. If they don't account for it upfront, you then get an unauthorized expenditure at the end of the year. But what it tells you is that there isn't enough attention to assessing the infrastructure assets, to planning for maintenance and budgeting for maintenance for those infrastructure assets. So when we talk about this unauthorized expenditure and highlight the dominance of non-cash items not being attended to, it's one of the key indicators of why you get infrastructure assets not being maintained properly and no budget for that maintenance. We've also highlighted that 203 municipalities had an insufficient budget for infrastructure maintenance right at the beginning of the year. There is a norm that there should be 8% of the value of infrastructure assets provided for in terms of dealing with proactive and ongoing maintenance that is then funded based on a maintenance plan. And that maintenance plan is rolled out during the course of the year and that rolling out is monitored. When you don't even have that budget to begin with, it's unlikely that the maintenance will happen. And now during the course of the year, once the budgets are approved, we find that poor record keeping, the lack of daily and monthly control, the lack of in-year and year-end reporting, as well as the lack of review and monitoring of compliance, end up with a situation where basic controls are simply not effective, and the ability to manage what resources are available is actually constrained. And this we then experience with the quality of submission of financial statements at the end of the year. When you look at the audit outcomes and you combine the clean audits but as well as those with unqualified opinions on their financial statements, is that they have critical financial statements. It tells you that more than 50% of municipalities are able to publish credible financial statements. However, when you start the audit, only a quarter of them have quality financial statements, which highlights the point about poor planning and poor financial controls during the course of the year. And we try and understand why that is. Our assessment is that there is still a lack of skills and capacity to deal with financial management in municipalities. Even though many people are appointed and remunerated in different finance functions, we see a gap around instability as well as competence. We also see that with the instability, a number of CFO vacancies took a long time to fill. The accounting officer being the municipal manager is key to establishing strong management control right across the institution. And if that role is not filled on time with somebody who's got the right sort of skills and somebody who's appropriately supervised by the council, then the ability to manage the key functions of the municipality is compromised. And we've seen that with the instability, there were a number of vacancies at MM level that were not filled on time. And then what municipalities do is they then end up relying on using consultants to provide financial statements. And that would translate into other functions as well. So other skills and capacity as a recourse to the inability to report on financial management properly, there's the element of governance and accountability. We're not seeing the type of impact that internal audit and audit committees ought to be providing. And even though every single municipality has got an internal audit function and an audit committee, we're not seeing the impact of their work. Our experience has been that there are a number of professionals appointed to play these roles. However, the nature of the work that they do and the recommendations they issue are not valued and ultimately implemented by those that run government. So when you don't have an accounting officer that takes the recommendations of internal audit and audit committee seriously, the value of that investment is very much. We've also seen that the support by coordinating institutions was not the right level. However, as I've indicated, that is starting to improve. The instability at council has also been a major feature in terms of the lack of capacity and the lack of discipline to drive reliable reporting on financial management. And then we've also seen that the councils themselves, even when they are in place, are not well equipped and disciplined adequately to deal with their responsibilities as given in law. They are the ones who approve the budget. They are the ones that the law provides should be monitoring spending and checking that the budget is being deployed in a way that has been designed. And when we see these weaknesses, it highlights that governance aspect is not running as it should. And so the impact will really be around financial resources not going into the places where they should, accountability being compromised, transparency being a challenge, and money not going in the best possible investment for the benefit of citizens. And that's really a story on financial management, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There's an area that we, on the next slide, which we've reported on a number of times now around the ongoing reliance on the use of consultants for financial reporting. most municipalities continue to use consultants to help them with financial reporting. This year, a total of 1.6 billion rand was spent, and that is in comparison to last year's 1.3 billion rand. It was spent by a total of 220 municipalities, with the vast majority of municipalities using consultants. And the reason that is provided to us for why municipalities use consultants for financial reporting purposes is that there's a lack of skills and there are ongoing vacancies. But much of it is about the lack of skills. We then look at what is the nature of the work that the consultants are doing. And what we're finding is that there's significant spend on asset management, which tells you that the ability for municipalities to manage their own assets is quite weak. Because if they need somebody year on year to help them put the numbers right for the balance sheet on assets, it then raises questions of what's happening during the course of the year. How are they maintaining these assets? Do they know where they are? How are they ensuring that these assets are being secured properly? Another key element of why of what these consultants do for municipalities on financial reporting is on tax services. And that includes not just complex matters on tax, which would be understandable, but what you're seeing more and more is that too many municipalities are getting consultants to help them on compiling VAT returns. This is a very basic accounting matter. And many of them even pay commissions to consultants who help them compile VAT returns so that they can claim VAT refunds from SARS. We've identified that another key area is on the preparation and review of financial statements. When we get the financials for audit, in the last slide I highlighted that the vast number of municipalities submit financials with poor quality. So we then ask the question, you've got people employed, you've got consultants that are available to you and whom you're sending money, why are we still struggling with quality financial statements at the end of the year? And what we're finding, having interrogated this, is that the work that the consultants are doing is not being reviewed adequately by the CFO and the accounting officer, which really starts to say that there's a dereliction of duty by those that are appointed to run municipal affairs. We're also seeing that there is inadequate records available for the consultants to rely on, and that's why the work that they do doesn't translate into quality financial statements. We also see that in a number of instances, it's poor project management of the consultants by those appointed to run the municipality, and also that consultants are appointed too late. It's only a small set of instances, 7% or 10 instances, where we found that it was the consultants themselves that did not deliver. So the real problem here, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we were placed at the door of those that lead municipalities more than the consultants themselves. We've seen that there's an ongoing reliance. These are consultants are appointed year on year, and then the impact is not being seen. In response, because often we are asked, AG, what did you do? You can't keep issuing the problem, highlighting the issue. So over many years, we've given insight into this work. That's why much of what I'm saying will be familiar. We've also influenced a number of players in the system to make different decisions, and in some instances that has worked. In Machabeng, we issued those sorts of recommendations, and the mayor decided that instead of hiring consultants for this year at a cost of over 8 million rand, they would make sure that they appoint people with skills to compile their financials. The net result was that Machabeng's audit outcome did not regress, so it was still where it should be, and we believe it will move in the right direction. If that level of attention continues. But what it tells you is that where there is responsiveness, we do get an impact. So we've tried insights, we've tried influence, and where people don't take the requisite action, we've now been forced to use our powers of enforcement and issue material regularities for ineffective use of consultants. Because that's the primary responsibility of the appointed leader of the municipality. If an accounting officer doesn't make sure that the money that they're spending on consultants are for proper value, for the benefit of the institutions and ultimately for citizens, then they must be held accountable. So we've issued no less than 11 material irregularities where we've identified that the inappropriate spend on consultants. And I want to just leave it by highlighting that much of it is about the role of the people who are leading municipalities. On the next slide, and I'm sure that this will be helpful to you, we provided some insight on the type of spend in each of the provinces with a comparison year on year. And we've also indicated to you where municipalities are landing up on audit outcomes having spent on consultants. If I start on the left-hand side of the slide, you'll see that the Western Cape, with its many clean audits, is spending much less than the Northwest and much less than Limpopo and much less than Mpumalanga. And so what it's going to tell you is that the problem is not about using external experts to help you with specific things that are particularly complex and the problem of using consultants. That's not the issue. It's about how you use this expertise, how you ensure that you get value for the spend that you are incurring on using consultants. One of the key messages that we issued in relation to the book over many years has been about this over-reliance on consultants. And the number is starting to reduce somewhat because the Premier has set that tone to say we will not be using consultants to the extent that we should, we will be. And that's starting to move in the right direction. However, there's still significant work to be done by those that run municipalities as well as those in the provincial government to push back on this over-reliance for little value. The next half of the slide on the right-hand side, you'll see that the clean audits use consultants, but to a very small extent. The ones with unqualified findings, where we even received poor quality financials and we have to give them a chance to correct their financials and then they get unqualified, they're spending over half a billion rand on consultants. Then if you look at the ones with qualified, in that even after the audit process, we could not get to a point where we were comfortable that their financials were correct, they're spending a great amount of money on consultants to help them with financial reporting, especially on assets. And that talks to skill, that talks to discipline, it also talks to governance failure. The adverse, you'll see that 176 million rand is spent by six municipalities. Much of it relates to the city of Tshwane, which over many years now has been spending a significant amount of money, more than 100 million rand a year, on consultants to help them with dealing with asset management. Instead of investing in the skills in-house to deal with asset management. And again, that is unfamiliar to you because we would have reported on it last year. I then want to deal with a little bit with financial health of municipalities, because when there's poor planning, when there's poor discipline, and there's lack of governance, you then get the type of leakage that compromises the financial health of municipalities. So on the next slide, we make the point that yes, we are aware that municipalities operate on an ever-growing set of financial pressures due to the economy, due to households not being able to afford to pay. But what we see is that there are many opportunities for municipalities to improve how they manage their own affairs so that the resources that they do have are deployed in the best way possible. With growing financial pressure, we would have expected municipalities to exercise much greater prudence in how they're spending the resources that they do have, and we're not seeing that. A key indicator would be the ongoing growth in the levels of food waste and wasteful expenditure. This year we had 4.7 billion rand of food waste and wasteful expenditure. Another key indicator would be the financial losses associated with the material irregularities that the office identified, which sits at 5.19 billion rand. And that's just on the MI that we identify. And often we would have raised irregular expenditure as an indicator, but we know that there are instances where irregular expenditure does not translate into financial loss. But this, I think, gives you a sense that there is non-compliance and there are indications of fraud that leads to real financial losses that should be avoided, especially in an environment where there is growing financial pressure. Speaking of the growing financial pressure, to give you a sense of what we found, on the next slide, we highlight that there are 17 municipalities, 7-0, that have themselves have indicated that they are concerned about their own financial health. They see that they are delivering a net deficit on operations in that they are generating less income than their expenses. They themselves are highlighting liquidity constraints in that they are generating less cash than what they are paying out. And the impact is that creditors go unpaid, because when you've got expenses that you can't pay, you delay paying your creditors, which impacts directly on the businesses that operate with government. We've also seen that the annual deficit for many municipalities has been growing because they've got more less income than what they had as expenses. And the number that we share there of an annual deficit of 11.87 billion rand excludes the numbers that would be there for adverse and disclaimer audit opinions, because those financials cannot be relied upon. So the number is actually worse than what you see there. One of the key issues that has to be dealt with in relieving the financial pressure of local government is the level of remuneration being paid through salaries and wages to employees and councillors relative to the resources that are available. We're finding that the salary bill of many municipalities is so significant that it crowds out the spend on key municipal functions. So service delivery suffers when you're spending more and more money on salaries and wages. So there has to be some attention to it. We then also look at what are the problems around revenue management. What is it that makes it difficult for municipalities to generate the type of income that they should as designed? And we're seeing that not only are they struggling to estimate the revenue that should be generated every year, but they also don't bill properly. The discipline of billing and collecting in too many instances is weak. We're also seeing that translate into debt that goes uncollected. We also see it in debt that is then written off, and then ongoing growing dependency on the equitable share that comes from the national fiscus. We've also seen that at the metro level, the number of metros for whom the rating agencies have downgraded their credit rating, which will make borrowing more expensive going into the future. In relation to the things that in our assessment could have been avoided around billing, around collection, we have issued material irregularities. Because once again, for many years we've identified the insight, we've also offered the opportunity to make recommendations and to influence the choices that municipal leaders make. Where our calls have not been heeded, we've issued those material irregularities. And some have responded. You'll see in our report, we deal at great detail about how some of the municipalities do respond well when we show them where they are going wrong with their billing program and they start to bill better. Unfortunately, the billings that should have happened many years ago are unlikely to ever be collected, but at least going forward, that can be corrected. We also see that even in the context of this diminishing set of financial health in municipalities, there are still poor payment practices. Creditors are not paid on time, as I indicated, but also Eskom, Water Board, their accounts are not paid on time, and even when there are agreements on payment schedules with municipalities, those will go unhonored. We see that the water losses in a number of municipalities also compromises their financial health. And some of it is about billing practices and collection, but also about the lack of maintenance of key infrastructure from a distribution point of view. And there are also still instances where there are payments for goods and services that are not being received, which really should not be a feature in any public institution. Again, we've issued these insights before. We have shared them with many players in the ecosystem, and where our calls are not being heeded, we've issued material irregularities. The procurement area remains a site of leakage for far too many municipalities. We see it with compliance findings on procurement in the vast majority of municipalities, but we also see it where there's a limitation on what we can audit. Sometimes, when we arrive and we audit and we ask for documentation to confirm the procurement processes that led to particular decisions, we don't get that documentation given to us. We report on it as a limitation of scope. It should worry all of us. There should be absolutely no public institution that's unable to show how they arrived at a procurement decision. And then we're also still seeing that there are employees and counselors that are benefiting from procurement exercises within local municipalities. In this regard, we've also issued some MRs. Another area that we've identified as an opportunity to deal with stemming the leakage of the scarce resources available is really in sorting out how effectively consultants are used, dealing with IT systems, make sure that we buy what we need and what we can use. We've identified that there are far too many cases where IT systems and software licenses are being paid for and yet the value is not coming through. In this regard, we've also once again issued a number of MIs which will now be acted on. I'd like to turn to the matter of service delivery in terms of our work. One of the key elements of our strategy, honourable members of SCORE, as you'll know, is about ensuring that the work we do rings true to the lived reality of citizens. And part of it has been about digging deep about what we do on performance information. Section 20 of the Public Audit Act provides that the Auditor General must audit performance information. And we've been doing that for many years. We identified an opportunity to deepen the work that we do in the belief that this will offer the type of insight that helps different players play their roles more effectively. It will help us to influence the right choices by different players. And hopefully we never get to it, but we might. Then we may have to use our enforcement tool to get people to do what's required. Our understanding of the planning, budgeting, and reporting cycle of government at the centre is that it gives every single public institution, including municipalities, to locate themselves in the long-range development plan and program for the country. And within the municipality, they ought to be able to use their integrated development plan program as well as their annual SDB process to shape their service delivery plans and objectives in a way that is complementary to what's happening within their district, what's happening within their province, and ultimately what happens in the country. That's how the whole system is meant to operate. There are different roles given to different players. In municipalities, we have found that for too long, performance information really just gets ignored. And what we've identified through our audit is that there are many opportunities to correct what happens around service delivery planning. And some of the findings I offer, I think, will give some insight on what is really going on. At the planning level, to begin with, we're finding that there is a prevalence of poor planning for service delivery. And we say that because some of the service delivery plans don't articulate key functions that should sit within a municipality. When you've got a municipality that does not plan for offering services on water and sanitation, in that in their service delivery plan, there is no articulation of what's going to be done, to what extent, and by whom, it then doesn't get done. It also is not budgeted for. And that's why at the end of the year, you get citizens surprised that the number of sewer connections that should be there are not there. That's why sometimes we get surprised that the number of houses that should be built are not there. It's because in many municipalities, those key functions are not articulated in their service delivery plan. And then they don't even get articulated in the performance contract between key managers within the institution. And what doesn't get planned for, doesn't get budgeted for, simply goes unnoticed. The service delivery plans of municipalities are compiled by the municipality, that is used by the provincial contract, and then ultimately approved by the council. When you've got a service delivery plan that doesn't have the type of functions provided for, that should, and yet it's being reviewed by COFTA, one has to then understand that there is an opportunity to strengthen the type of contribution into the ecosystem by provincial COFTA. And so we raise that with them as well. Sometimes they set annual targets that are very low. Sometimes those targets are put at zero for key functions. And that's why you end up with things not happening on the ground. In the metro space, there has been a program to set out common indicators that make for better delivery. Not all of the metros have adopted those common indicators. Sometimes for lack of budget, lack of capacity and systems and processes to deal with it. But that opportunity is also not being optimized in terms of driving delivery at the metro level. The other issues that we see around, and that's on the next slide, the other issues that we see around performance information, which really gives opportunity for us to improve service delivery, is insisting that the performance plans are prepared properly and that performance against those plans and targets is then monitored on a regular basis. So that come the end of the year, what is submitted to the AG is of good quality. Because if you do not have in-year control, much like on financial management, if you don't have key disciplines of collecting information, reviewing where things are, planning where things are not going right, at least prioritizing in a way that is transparent, and driving accountability where there are deviations from what's been said, you then have little hope of publishing a credible, useful, reliable performance report. What we're seeing then, as I indicated, performance information gets ignored. So the planning is not at the right level. The reporting is not at the right level. Only a quarter of municipalities presented performance reports that were credible. And only 42% ultimately published credible financial reports. So those on the teams in that yellow zone are not different from those in the qualified and the adverse around performance information. So whilst they applaud their credible financial statements, there must be an unqualified audit finding. The gap between that unqualified audit finding and service delivery can be found in this area of performance information. In performance information, what we're finding is that because things don't get planned for properly, then even the grants for dealing with infrastructure and different delivery programs, those grants are not being spent properly. Because nobody really plans for it, nobody really monitors that it's happening the right way, nobody monitors those projects. What we're seeing is that those municipalities that get performance information right, and the ones in the clean audit, they're the ones who take those grants, they plan for them properly, they use them properly. And we've gone to test a number of these projects, honorable members and honorable chair. The ones in the clean audit zone spend their grants, as opposed to the ones that are not in the clean audit zone. And the statistics are in our report. The ones in the clean audit zone are the ones where their projects go well. When we go and visit their projects, we find less problems. And where those problems are, they respond quickly. The ones in the other categories are the ones where you don't see that the grants are being used properly to deal with projects. And that's where you find projects in the ground, projects that are delayed, projects where money is gone and there's poor quality, or projects where there is no link between what's on the ground and what's being paid. It's now urgent, honorable chairs and honorable members, that every single player in the ecosystem worries about performance information, because that is the critical piece to service delivery. If we sort this out, to be able to close the gap between what municipalities are supposed to do and the money they get for it and what actually happens on the ground. The days of applauding credible financial statements, I suspect, are over. We really need to focus now on sorting out this area of performance information. Yes, some people complain that performance information is onerous, the framework is difficult to deal with. What we have found is that it is the basic set of disciplines that will get municipalities to operate at the right function, at the right level. Often when there's poor planning, there's lack of monitoring, it translates into lack of delivery. And so our report has got examples where we found that delivery even doesn't happen, even when there are times, and then there are no consequences. There's no proper reporting, there are no consequences, and there's no court correction, which will explain why year on year on year you have problems that go undealt with and unarticulated in local government. I'll move on to the next slide. Some of the impact of the lack of attention to service delivery. And here, we can articulate this because we've actually gone to the different sites. TMHSA has gone to visit no less than 249 projects in local government in different parts of the country. So we're able to link our key messages to reality on the ground. And we're hoping this insight helps to inspire a different posture across all spheres of government in terms of dealing with the state of local government. So we've often raised the matter about the lack of spend on maintenance, the lack of maintenance plans that are credible. We've often raised the problems around the lack of preventative maintenance, and we've also highlighted that infrastructure assets are deteriorating. And we've also said that when we look at the financial statements, the qualification on audit often is in the area of asset management, which translates to the lived reality of citizens in this way, where you've got wastewater treatment plants that are not being maintained, where you've got new wastewater treatment plants that should be on the ground, but they're not being put into the ground, yet money is going through the system. And the impact is that you've got the lived reality of citizens being compromised. You've got the environment being compromised both again. Our teams have visited water treatment plants, they've visited water resources, they've visited communities in different parts of the country. They've witnessed the impact of water supply issues in different communities. They've experienced directly the impact of untreated wastewater being discharged into water sources. They've seen that in far too many communities there's inadequate sanitation services, and they've also experienced firsthand the impact on the health of those communities. What we've done as the AGSA, we've offered the insight, we've driven conversations that we believe will influence different choices by local government, by provincial government and national government. But in the meantime, we've also issued material irregularities. Those that deal with where assets are not being protected, which lead to financial loss, where there is pollution of water sources, which harms the public and harms the environment. We've also issued material irregularities on landfill sites that are not being managed, such that solid waste is not being managed properly, which impacts the lived reality of citizens directly. In a number of instances, these MIs are being responded to. However, what you witnessed and experience as South Africans happening in Tshwane and Hammanskraal over the past week and a bit. As tragic as that is, and really should never have happened where people lost their lives, we believe it is a reminder of the urgency of us acting on these things. It is a harsh reminder of the impact of continued neglect on these things, at local government, but also in the other spheres of government. Incidentally, in that particular instance, we had actually issued a material irregularity on that Rooibal wastewater treatment plant, and the details are available in our audit report. The next slide highlight the matters around the disclaimer of audit opinion. I think, Honourable Kota, you highlighted the appetite to understand where these disclaimers are. So that map gives you a good sense of where the disclaimers of audit opinion are adopted in different parts of the country. The majority are in the northwest, and then some are in the Northern Cape, and then the different provinces have got disclaimers as well. Last year, when we issued our report, we highlighted the critical input that needed to be felt from provincial government in supporting these municipalities to move out of that space. We highlighted just how undesirable a disclaimer of audit opinion is. You remember that we visited the different municipalities, we looked at their projects, and we were able to link what can easily sound as a technical term, disclaimer of report opinion, link it to dysfunction, and link it to the harm of institutions, but also harm to the public. The good thing is that in a number of instances, our message has been heeded. Provincial governments in a number of provinces have stepped up to support their offering, and they've been able to drive improvement. Out of the 25, or now 26 from last year, we had 9 move out of the disclaimer zone. And whilst that's not enough, we have to recognize that by the time we issued our report last year, the year end was imminent. There has not been enough time for the impact of the different interventions to be found. But that notwithstanding, there's been improvement in the Eastern Cape. So when you see the green, the ones written in green, that's where there's been an improvement. Water is soon removed out of disclaimer. Kripani District Municipality moved out of disclaimer. Amatole was still outstanding at the time that we started our analysis. If you look at the KZN, moved to any Kotilanga, Libanele moved out of disclaimer zone, which I think are important to note. And much of it has been about provincial contact sending support to those municipalities, sending expertise to help them compound financial statements. And now we must now get them to move in the right direction out of even qualified and into a different zone. In Mpumalanga, Dibalisene and Jeff Moroka improved out of disclaimer. In Bilabila, there was an improvement out of disclaimer. And that being a combination of efforts by the municipal leadership itself, but also by the provincial government. And there's been some improvements in the northwest as well, although they still have a great deal of work to do. But I hope that report, that map is helpful to you. What we're seeing in disclaimers, and just to give flavor to it, so we talked about the projects and the assets last year, and our report provides some detail of those this year as well. But if you look at the nature of the institutions that are characterized by disclaimer audit opinion, we're seeing that's where human resources is not being dealt with properly. There are people in roles that don't have competence, and then you also still have some vacancies. But in far too many instances, there are people employed in key roles at these municipalities that don't have the competence. There's an ongoing reliance on consultants. You see the financial reporting, but in other functions as well. And then you also see that there are governance and accountability failures at the council level and then translating into the administrative level. Until the functioning of individual institutions improves, even the support for provincial government will have a short-term impact and very limited impact. We've got to get these municipalities functioning at the right level. And the urgency with which we've got to do it cannot be overstated. You'll recall, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, that last year we issued material irregularities on disclaimer, because we took the view that if you've got a disclaimer of audit opinion, not only are you falling foul of the law in terms of maintaining proper records on how you spend finances, but you're harming the institution. And we see also that you're harming the public. So it's been heartening to see that our messages are being heeded, our MIs are being responded to. However, there is still significant work to be done. The next slide deals with some of the projects in the disclaimer of disclaimed municipalities. That's where financial management is poor, that's where you've got infrastructure being neglected, and that's where you've got direct impact on communities who don't benefit from decent water and sanitation services, and neither do they benefit from decent solid waste management and wastewater management. And these details are available in our report. This will sound familiar because it's similar work to what we did last year, but I think it gives you even greater insight on the direct impact of dysfunction at municipal level and the experiences of citizens. The next slide deals with the compliance matters. Every year we report on ongoing compliance issues around uncompetitive procurement issues, which lead to irregular expenditure. Irregular expenditure this year is 30 billion rand, and we often don't talk much about that number because I've been at pains to say it's actually incomplete and unreliable, because this year you had 30% of municipalities qualified on the completeness of irregular expenditure. So giving you that number is probably not helpful. However, it does tell a story about the lack of discipline, the lack of commitment to operating within the rule of law. And our problem is not so much about irregular expenditure in itself, but the lack of attention to dealing with it. Because when you don't deal with consequence management, you then entrench a culture where there is tolerance for transgression and impunity going forward. So that's the story on compliance. If there are questions, I'm happy to deal with them, but I think for the moment I'd like to move on to the next story, which I know is of great interest to the members of COLEG, which relates to material irregularities. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we are now in the fourth year of implementing our MI power. Last year, we audited 170 auditees and included our MI powers and our MI process. Having built on the 94 of the previous year, you'll recall that we started with only 9 in 2019. We've now come to a point where we've issued a total of 268 MIs. Most of them, 195 of them, relate to material losses, material financial losses that we've been able to link to those non-compliances, where there's been payments for goods and services that were not received, where there is unfair or uncompetitive or uneconomical procurement processes, leading to financial loss. We've identified instances where there's been ineffective use of financial reporting consultants, which I've just spoken about. We've identified instances where value for money is not being received, where revenue is not being billed or recovered, and where there are interest and penalties on late or non-payment. You recall this we talked about last year as well, where we said that processing wasteful expenditure happens sometimes not because there's no money in the bank, but because that CFO and that accounting officer choose to prioritize paying other things and violate the payment plans that have been agreed to with either ESCOM or the Water Board. And then we've also got in that number, assets and investment losses associated with especially the BBS investment. So that 5.19 billion rand relates to those financial losses that we've been able to find and we've been able to track. There are other types of material irregularities that we identified. 44 of them relate to those repeat disclaimers and the non-submission of financial statements. And that's where we say, accounting officer, you're falling foul of the law by not submitting financial and you're falling foul of the law by not maintaining proper records. And actually, you are compromising transparency and accountability, which ultimately harms the institution. So we might not be able to put a figure for a financial brand and say, but it is an MI that we issue. Those 44, in the vast majority of instances, they're being responded to. We've seen the disclaimers coming down. We've also seen the submissions coming up. And then we issued 29 MIs related to the pollution of water resources as well as the poor management of landfill sites, which we took as a view are causing substantial harm to the general public. So we issue those MIs, and in some instances we have then referred them to other players in the ecosystem that are responsible for monitoring compliance with the laws relating to water resource management as well as solid waste management. The next slide tells the story of how our MI powers are having a particular impact. The matter we raise, we've identified that in 87% of instances, it's matters that accounting officers should have been acting on anyway. But when we raise the material regularity, then they act. We say that whilst it's good for us to celebrate that there is an impact from our MI, what we must all insist on, all of us in the ecosystem, we must insist that accounting officers act not only on MIs from the AG, but they act on our audit findings as well as the findings of internal audit. Because that's how we'll start to get a culture where there is the type of responsiveness that is required from leadership. The type of MIs that we've identified in a number of instances are being attended to in the way that we would have guided. The financial losses are being recovered. 150 million rand has gone back into the coffers of municipalities. 18.85 million rand is losses that have been prevented from taking place, where contracts were cancelled because we issued an MI and the accounting officer responded. And there is 310 million rand that is in the process of being recovered. So a total of 479 million rand of public resources that are being protected because the AGSA has used its new power. There are other actions that are having the type of impact that is notable. The submission of outstanding financials, contracts with suppliers that are being cancelled, fraud and criminal investigations that are being instituted, and disciplinary processes being undertaken where that's required, and internal controls being improved so that the initial type of problem does not recur. So this responsiveness is encouraging. What you must insist upon is that there be the same sort of responsiveness for other audit findings. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I think that we can all be proud of what Team AGSA has been able to contribute to the accountability ecosystem in applying its new powers. What we must be concerned about is that it takes an MI for someone to submit financial statements, and that should simply not be the case. The next slide deals with what type of action we take and where there hasn't been the type of responsiveness we would have guided on. We issued recommendations in a number of instances, and you may recall that this list looks familiar to what we gave you last year. And that's because these recommendations are issued and then we have to give the opportunity for people to implement, and we continue to track them. So it's an ongoing set of engagements. We've issued remedial actions. We've also issued a notice for a certificate of debt process, and we've referred matters to public bodies for further investigation. Our view is that we really should not be getting to a certificate of debt. Unfortunately, it looks like that's where we're headed. We take inspiration from those accounting officers that do act once we've issued material regularity, and that's what we should all be insisting upon. I'm now getting towards the tail end of my input, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, which deals with the root causes that underpin the state of local government as I have painted over the last few minutes. It still matters around inadequate skill and capacity. And in many instances, that's about leadership, because if you have stable, competent, dedicated political leadership in a municipality, they are the ones that will make it their business to employ competent, ethical people to run that municipality, to give them clear direction, to give them space to do their work, and then to monitor them. And when things go wrong, to act. So much of it is about leadership. We also see governance failure a governance area dealing with the role of accounting officers, the role of internal audit committees, as I've spoken about, the role of the coordinating department in provincial level, the role of council and impact and disciplinary board. Because if we don't deal with those things and make sure that they are effective in the way that the law demands, we're not going to get these root causes dealt with. And again, much of it is about leadership posture and leadership competence and leadership discipline. Then you see that another key root cause is about the lack of accountability and consequences. When things go wrong, because from time to time, there will be something that goes wrong. The critical thing is for there to be action that is swift, that is courageous, and that is consistent. What we're seeing is that irregular signature goes unattended, audit findings go unattended, it takes an MI for people to act. We've got to start creating a culture through leadership, a culture where there's an insistence on performance, there is attention to maintaining good organizational and institutional integrity, and there is attention to matters of accountability and transparency. And which really links to the call to action that we are issuing today, which is that we've got to prioritize our local government. And I think if you look at on the slide, we've highlighted that. There is a professionalization framework that's been approved by the cabinet. That framework, when we look at it, we believe is implemented across all three spheres of government and implemented decisively will make a big contribution to professionalizing local government and making sure it has the type of skills and capacities that is required to turn it around. Without professionalizing, it's going to be difficult to fill vacancies with competent people because professionals want to work in an environment that is characterized by professionalism. And if you don't have a professional local government, we're not going to be able to turn the tide on paying people who don't know how to do the job or who don't do the job, who are not ethical, nor the tide on this over-reliance on consultants. Our next call to action is about the role of the coordinating institution. Yes, this report that we issued today demonstrates that there is some movement in the right direction. There's an urgency to ensure that that movement carries through so that we have the type of impact that's required. Stability and strength at the oversight level, especially council, is absolutely critical. There's got to be attention to ensuring that the impacts and the disciplinary board are equipped and are disciplined in executing on their functions. And then the matter of internal audit and audit committees. And as I indicated earlier, without competent, ethical, disciplined, professional administrators, especially at the key levels of MM and CFO and supply chain manager, without that, the impact of internal audits and audit committees will not be felt. It's important that control gets attention right across the system on both financial and performance management issues. And it's also critical that the agencies of local government act on their responsibilities as given in law. And that when they don't, the provincial legislatures hold them accountable. We believe that the guidance issued by the National Treasury on how irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure should be dealt with is available to everybody, is appropriate for the circumstances, and indeed it should be implemented. And so too, the consequence management and accountability framework that the National Treasury has issued. That must also be implemented. These tools are available, and if implemented by leadership in the municipality, will make the difference. And we encourage the council with every single municipality, as well as the provincial executive and the legislators in every single province to monitor the material irregularities on a regular basis so that we're not just relying on the AGSA to monitor and track, but all of us in the ecosystem are holding hands in driving the type of improvements that will see us building local government towards better resilience and better responsiveness, and ultimately deliver the type of services that will improve the lives of people. And that is the story. I've spoken for a very long time now, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, but I hope my input has assisted in giving a good sense of what's in our report and has responded to some of the matters that you indicated you had a particular interest in. I'll hand back to you, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, AG, for your report. It's a mixed bag of issues that you have raised with us, and with interest. I think that those who know and appreciate the importance of local government, they tend to have a wave on your report, which seeks to one do appreciate some elements of truths of good practice with the greatest respect for why, and which presents a sorrowful story for our local government. The basis of that is on the outlook. I've seen your financial-based report. When you look into the performance side, it becomes so critical. We have started one little example that we experience as we sit here today. The Chone experience. Which relates to unmaintained infrastructure and the considerable care for planning for such, and the failure to do so give results, as in our experience. A number of people who have died in the process because of getting into the taste of polluted water services. Thank you very much, AG, for your presentation. Yes, it was carried with length, but as well as passion, because that's what we live for as the community to receive this kind of the report. Here it is, colleagues. It covers a number of critical elements which have landed by a call of action. And that call of action begins to identify key critical areas. If they are attended to, certain things will be realized to strengthen that value of local government. Government around the corner, very close to our own communities. We feel, we see, we touch, we taste, and something which we must enjoy at all times. Sorrowful story. Your actual frame of accountability ecosystem catches it. If one element fails, the entire system breaks. Once the system works together, things all out in a positive direction. So here it is, colleagues. If you have questions, comments, I will leave it to you. But the report remains as a table to support for our parliament and for everybody to find time to look into the details of it which is available to us in terms of this the product that's available online as well for everybody to have access to. I'll take hands for questions and comments. Let me do it this way. Go to the Honorable Coaches of Galap, of Mamu Court, Honorable Singh, Honorable Lenzana, and Yepa. That was a good one. What is it?
It's
a cool, yeah. And then Mamu, and then Matafa, and then. Close the questions and the comments. The AG is reflecting here. The head of audit, the deputy, the auditor general, and the as well heading national executive. There is a gentleman who's currently sitting somewhere for monitoring how the communication aspects behave, and so there's a range of people who are somewhat present here. We will appreciate that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, AG. You're also very elaborate. It's a very good report, I must say. But it's scary with regard to the work that needs to be done. But clear documentations is a clear picture of what the route should be. I wanted to focus on the root causes. You're putting them as issue of inadequate skills, issue of leadership, and over-reliance on consultancy. I just want to say that it's been coming to local government with one sphere where many people, many South Africans, they are relying on local government because the sphere of government is closer to the people. And this comes at a time where there is no uniformity in local government. They used to have what is called IDP. And the IDP by nature meant that it's a clear plan of municipality. And everybody buys into it and is funding thereof. These days, something of the past. I don't think they're even looking at the IDP as we speak right now. So, this detailed report will help, particularly to the Premier, the NEC, the Councillor, all of us, who are all in it together. But at the end of the day, we need value for money. The government has been calling for value for money for a very long time. And in local government seems to be where people do as they like. There is no heavy hand that says this is the direction that we need to take. Let's go this direction. What I'm impressed with is what you said about KZN, saying there is a close meet coming forward from the Premier's side and all others to help the local government. Of course, you would say that she's because she knows local government. There's a turnaround. We hope that in other areas as well, the root would be, let's dump this nonsense that we are doing, of doing it really like, the people out there want services, and they want them now. Let me just stop there, because there are so many people who want to speak. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all our members and AP and your team. And I think if any one of us don't become emotional on this matter that has been presented to us, then there's something wrong with us as public representatives. I said the other day, Chairperson, when we received the presentation on 2021, that I look forward with trepidation to today. And I can tell you my fears have been justified, and all our fears have been justified, because there has been little or no progress. I think the only light at the end of the tunnel here is the fact that we've got an efficient office of the AGSA that's doing the work that we are supposed to be doing. And when I say we, I mean all of us as political representatives from a local to a national level. They are doing more of the oversight than us. So it questions our role as well as people who should be oversighting these activities on the ground. But having said that, Honourable Chair, I think if we as this committee want to absolve ourselves, we can. Because our role specifically is to ensure that the office of the AGSA is fully equipped with the financial resources and human resources to continue to do the kind of work that they are doing. Many of the detailed issues here are not for us. It is for those people on the ground, the councillors, the MECs, the premiers. And, you know, Chair, I just wish that all the TV channels and radio channels can give the office of the AG enough time for South Africans to receive this presentation. For South Africans to receive this presentation. It will lie with us here for a while. Some of the media houses are here, they will cover it. But people on the ground need to know what kind of governance is taking place in their respective municipalities. And this is across the political spectrum. This is not about politics. This is about people getting value for money, as you said, for that. That's what it is. So I really want to appreciate the work, the incredible work done by you, AG, and your team. You have really, really done well, you know, to at least say there's one office that's contributing to the development of people in our country, the whole community of people. Having said that, Chair, you know, when I look at the mission of the Auditor General, one of it says building confidence. In whom are we building confidence? You're trying your best. But are the others coming to the party here to build confidence in the people of South Africa? The answer is no. So maybe, AG, you need to look at your mission as well and look at the building confidence part and see whether you need to change it or not. Because you may be doing it, others are not doing it. But Chair, having said that, consultants, we asked about consultants the other day, 1.3, 1.4 billion. Many of these consultants are taking us for a ride because they've got the fingers in the cookie jar. They're giving bribes. They're doing all sorts of things and they're not doing the work that they are supposed to do. And many of them, I feel, are delaying the work that they do in council to make those councils dysfunctional from a financial point of view and take longer to rectify the problems than they should. So I don't know if there's a body that controls consultants or something like that. But perhaps we need to look at internal audit. Where's internal audit in all of this in the local municipality? And perhaps we need, besides the media coverage, we need the President and the whole of Cabinet and all of us to sit one day for a whole week and receive this. And walk out from there at the end of the week and say, what are we going to do? But that is the big question here. Receiving the report is one thing, but what are we going to do? What is the role of the School of Government business? Can't we say to them, you go and have courses here to accredit people to be financial officers, basic financial accounting principles that they must go to. And only those people should get employed in municipalities. Not friends, and not relatives, but people who have a particular qualification. You know, in India, you get the Indian Administration Services. They go to the school, they get trained, and they get absorbed in different departments across the political sphere. So perhaps that's something that we need to look at. But we really need to support this office, you know, maybe with more powers. Excuse me, Chair. In 2018, we've got powers on MI. Is there anything, AG, that you think you need more powers to be able to help South Africa and the citizens of South Africa? I mean, look at those examples you gave us there of sewage and all sorts of things happening all over. I mean, tell us what more powers you need, then the chairman will consider it in terms of amending the act. Tell us you want more people, you know, in your establishment. We'll give you more people. We'll do that because it's going to save South Africa. And make our people have hope in governance in our country. 27 years, not a chairperson, 27 years of local government. What have we said? There are a few lovely, glaring examples, right? But where are the others? And if we don't address these problems sooner rather than later, as us, SCOAG, yeah, then I think we'll be failing in our responsibility. So, you know, there's not much more I can say about, you know, the actual municipalities and what they've done and what they've not done. But now we can't hang our head and say, well, there's nothing we can do. So, Chair, I think we need to, maybe on your study tour as well, look at other countries. How are they managing the audits of local governments? And the other, they've got levels of government. What are they doing? Who's doing what? How far have they progressed? Not even Western countries, but even in African countries. Because I think we'll get some good examples in African countries about that. That's all I can say for now, Chair. But, you know, I've served on this committee for years. And it's the same old deja vu. Except that we're getting a better quality of report and accounting as we move forward from the Office of the AGSO, which we appreciate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Singh, for your pages of comments and some proposals coming up around the angle of your strength of the comments as well. Honourable Nathan?
No, thanks, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning, AG and your team. I'm looking at the date, Chairperson, and the AG. This calendar is correct. It says today is the 1st of May. And I wonder where would we be come the 1st May next year. Maybe perhaps not all of us would be sitting here receiving this report next year. Which means our last report. And I know Mr. President will have his own time. Pardon me, Chair, it just came that we should be able to say, yes, AG was traumatized quite a length of this path together. And the one thing I am pleading in this committee of Chair, AG, is that when we are talking funding of HSA, I think this committee has done well, though not 100%. As the Honourable Singh is saying, Chairperson, we have to do more. We have to see if we cannot legislate the better way of funding such that it is not only that you receive the bulk of the resources from positive. And then I'm just trying to check going forward. Let me also welcome the report, AG. You know, funny enough is that I had pre-arranged comments and questions, but we somehow dealt with them. And now I would
expressed myself before or less commenting or asking or not to have already said. But the heart shows that at least our pulse, that is the community and the young AGSA, is in sync. We are a team, as I said. On clean audit, some of the AG accuse AGS that your team is somehow colluding with authorities and that results in what we should have according to competence. Because look, what they would do, they would link, see a way of polishing their books assisted by the auditor sense, and they win, but immediately they cross over. They forget the how, and then relax, go back. And now we see what we see. I think then, despite throwing allegations against and trying to defend, we need a way of monitoring the very audit teams that are sent to these responsibilities. Perhaps some kind of rotation, some kind of avoiding chairperson that one auditor gets used to a particular entity or institution. It's possible, let them see your faces almost, you know, so that they are not that open to lobby. I'm very careful here, chairperson. You know, when you're dealing with an allegation, you have to be very, very careful. Because an allegation may be or may not be there. I had a point here on implementation of the Audit Act regarding the material irregularities, and as I said, that one had to pre-arrange the kind of bullets only to find that they are covered. Because you see progress. You see progress as far as that is concerned, and which is in, and we have to give an accurate check. This question of non-submission of financial statements, I'm thinking, Chair, is it a road for me? Yeah, I think road is fine. Is it a road for me, AG, to say non-submission is tantamount to refusal to submit? Refusal to submit, tantamount to refusal to be audited, and then therefore warrant a disclaimer. It's wrong. And we want that it's not justified. And the two is perpetual to jeopardy. Warrant that it be also regarded as a material irregularity, such that the gift come in and bite. I'm showing this to you as your consideration. I had a question here, Chair, on the AGSA having time to touch base with a few municipalities wherein they would conduct some impact assessment. It is there. It is there. And it is assisting us, Chair. As the committee, if now we have to go out there and do oversight.
children have one or two spices where we could say this is put like that. So that going out there we would be carrying both the stick and the carrots, not only going there to find fault. You are saying it is not the first thing which is notorious. Which I don't want to add. Then you are saying the Western Cape, on top, which also I do not want to add. But if not, can you please take time and do the same that you did with other municipalities in the Western Cape? See if the money spent well, the money accounted for well, actually did what it was intended to do well. So that the wise, because that terminology could be in sync. Avoid the situation where when you go to CDC right now, when you say, you would see what you saw there in Magana, but here, they in Cape Town now. Whereas in Magana, we're talking of the schema, we're talking of functionality, we're talking of all, but in the same case, we're talking of it as well. I want to capture what I'm trying to say, gentlemen. I don't want to bear say carrots the Western Cape can only do well on paper, but practically done that it isn't. I don't want to bear into that. I'm trying to avoid getting into that. If I do, sorry. The question of capacity and scale is in many respects. But you have addressed my question, and now I have to flip it a little, because my original question, Chair, was, do we see a decline or willingness to reduce the use of consultants by municipalities? Now, the report says no. I don't have to ask that question now. That's why I'm not asking this, but now, I'm now echoing what the AG is actually raising. That perhaps we can engage to those municipalities, because there is one municipality which AG mentioned, which has actually taken a decision to undo this reliance on consultants and did not drop, but instead is now in the correct pedestal to move forward. If we can then have the list of other notorious municipalities which perpetually use consultants but not the benefits of the municipality, as they were mentioned here. This question I'll check for me. If I was at school, I would say you are assisting me going to an examination. It's a simple ballot question. Is the finding of misstatement not a criminal offense? It was not the issue. The moment you punch in your form, knowing fully well that it is not the correct picture, you are trying to classify what you know that it is. It's not a criminal. So thanks, Chapter 6. Thanks. We welcome this report and we believe that it's going to end the same committee going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mbenjana. Honorable Tawui. Tawui.
I
Okay, I'm back. Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, first and foremost, let me apologize for being late. There was a serious accident on the freeway, and unfortunately, children have lost their lives. But it was quite a bad one, and literally all roads coming to Parliament has been one challenge from another from the airport. And with our challenges of SAA as well, so the morning flight was not there, so we had to take the second flight from there. So I apologize on that one, Chair. Chairperson, firstly, let me also welcome the... Thank you, Chair. Let us welcome the report of the AG, and as usual, it's always the most beautiful thing you'll ever witness in this country. It is one of the things I actually enjoy coming to Parliament for. Like, you know, it's one of those things you actually enjoy coming to your committee because you know that you will meet professionalism, which is just above and beyond that we're not used to in this country. Chair, well, AG, I just want to understand before I give my thoughts on issues, but the questions that I have, you have on page 11 on your presentation, you spoke about the 70% of the municipalities that said that they had ongoing concerns on their financial challenges. I'm just interested to know if they actually gave an insight on what they think the solutions will be, or were they just saying that because they are hoping that the Auditor General's office will come and fix their problems? And then on the issues of the billing challenges and like the water leakages, you know, these are some of the things that will make you literally very upset because it's like we're not going forward. I mean, so many years in our democracy, you still have municipalities which have challenges of billing, and it's not that you don't have young people who have went to school and studied for these things. It's just that you have people who are just put there and they don't know what they're doing, on the other hand, you have highly qualified people who could have assisted us with the thing. You know, when I saw water leakages, I even wanted to laugh because I remember there was another program which I think the president of the country once introduced when they said they were going to train young people to deal with water leakages. And then you ask yourself, why are we still here? Why are we still in the situation where seemingly people were trained, people were supposed to deal with these water leakages, but yet still the most expensive natural resource, because once you lose water, you can't get it back. It's gone. You still have such issues of water leakages happening. On the issue of payment of goods and services and not collected, we've been suffering through that for quite some time now, and you can see that it's a serious challenge, but I will speak about it in the end, H.U. Now, I'm having a problem with maybe it's the wording process, and maybe you can assist us because you're more educated than us. On an unfair and uncompetitive procurement practices, the fact that it is reported as limitation of scope, I feel like, AG, sometimes people, they hide things from the office of the AG. They literally hide them from you, put them under the carpet, because they know that if you cannot see what is in that document, you will then report it as a limitation of scope instead of fraud, theft, of exactly what it was. And I feel like, you know, maybe sometimes they always say EFF is either it's black or it's white. I really wish it was either or. Mm-hmm. It was either it is white or it is black. It was either it is green or it is red. Just a poking lens. AG, so really, I honestly wish the wording can change. I don't know if there's any powers to do that, but if there was, I really wish it could be, because I really feel like they do this in order to hide serious things. That's why they just make sure you don't get those documents. Now, you also touch on the issue of the macro common indicators, but yes, they are not so common. I don't want to blame anyone, but again, I cannot help myself, AG,
but to look at thrones of black, gold and green who have put us in this position of municipalities gaining metro statuses so that traders can earn more in salary. And then we find ourselves with metros who maybe should not have received that status, but they have received that status because it was more about the salary increase than while we find ourselves with that metro. But I really wish that, I don't know how the AG can assist on that one to make sure that all the metros follow the same indicators if it's possible. Now, on the issue of credible financial statements vis-a-vis the performance, I'm very happy that the AG have touched on this one because, you know, we may clap on one hand and only to find out that what we're clapping for might not be there. You know, you may clap that everything is beautiful, but when you go to the ground, that building that they say was there was not there. We have seen in municipalities where a substation is supposed to be in a certain place. You come back, when you do audit, there's no substation at all, no substation. So I'm happy that you have touched on it, H. Now, you know, I am having a problem because I think we have now reached a stage in this country, AG, where we are now facing what I call local government gangster paradise. That's where we are now. You know, the gangsters within the local government are actually making sure that nothing works. There is a friend of mine who once said, there is order in disorder. So when you make sure that every municipality in this country is in disorder, there is order for them because then they are able to loot, steal, and make sure that whatever that they need to happen, happens. It is a shame that we find ourselves now in this time where people have died of cholera. Like, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I'm asking myself, which country am I in? Is this South Africa? Where you find citizens have died of cholera. A simple thing that could have been prevented. And it still goes back to we are living in the land of gangsters who have made sure that our municipalities did not function properly in order for them to be able to do what they want to do, and that is to steal our money. So I do not know how we can change that. Maybe the voters can assist us on that. I'm happy to hear Honorable Mlenzana already speaking that some of them might not be here next year, come the 31st of March. But, you know, Che, this is honestly one of the most things that disturbs me the most when you see them in the report of the AG, because some of these things could be fixed. But I'm also here to AG when I'm finishing my last point, I just want to say, you know, AG are the sheriff, and the MIs are your AK-47. And if you point them properly at the right direction, then you will find accounting officers now making sure that they tell their handlers that the AK-47 is facing my way and therefore I need to comply. I really wish somebody can go to jail. I honestly wish, if there's anything else, like other members have said, that we can do to empower your powers, that we can empower you so that you can literally assist us to make sure that these gangsters who are busy giving and have been a time of their lives in our municipalities can be escorted to jail. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, your comments and the questions. No, don't mind about talents. That's what is good about numbers. One is one, two is two, three is three. If they're not matching up, engage you deal with that element. Because we have made very good inputs, let alone the state of yours of getting into colors. There's no color in this page.
I absolutely
thank you very much.
been there for. Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to yourself, members of the Portfolio Committee, AG, and Team AG. Chair, let me welcome the report as presented by the AG. And be safe to say that there are issues when you look at the report that one may want to raise, but are not relevant to the AG's office. But however, I think in this portfolio committee, it will be better if we can have a portfolio committee meeting with local government and national treasury, if we can have that arrangement. I'm saying this because, Chair, most of the issues that have been raised, when you look at the I will start my point of the usage of consultants in various municipalities. As per the report presented by the AG, one can say that we can employ the services of consultants, but if you don't know as an auditee what is it that you want, you'll never be able to get a value for money that you are paying as an institution. Which brings me back to the point that AG, my argument is that the concern of the consultants would be of preparations of your annual financial statement, but also the planning, the initial planning, which is a problem, the IDP. If you don't know or you are not the person who are consolidating that particular document, it will always cause a friction between your financial statements and also your ITP. And it brings me back to the matter of the performance plan. If you are the consultant preparing the annual financial statement without the performance management unit of the municipality, there will be no signage. That will also cause your inconsistency in terms of your performance versus your financial statement. And it also brings us back to the exhibit, because it's a circle. If the other angle is not planned properly, it doesn't say to you that you will not get things right. Even if you can have those credible financial statements, you will not have things right. Which also brings one back to an issue of if you have a political leadership, also your municipal functionary or staff, that do not have the basic accounting and basic audit as skills, you will not be able to consolidate or read or interpret the financial report. And also politically, if you do have people who will pass the budget and 90% of them do not understand the budget, will come after 20 years saying the same thing. But how do we deal with that issue? I think also political parties must take responsibility of their deployees. Those who are deployees of different political parties, when you go to government, there must be on a time-to-time basis where you call your deployees to come and account on certain issues, not compliance in terms of paper, but also compliance in terms of service delivery. There must be a consequence management for politicians and also for your administration. If we don't have that, AG will go backward. And also, it brings one to the issue of the usage of consultants, of course. When you look at the financial statements, 85% of them are being produced by the consultants. It boils back to different units in your municipality where you have the Department of Infrastructure, you have engineers, but you still employ the services of engineers from outside to come and do the job what are these functionaries doing in your office whilst you are saying that you can be able to, you are employing people? And, Chair, the issue of internal auditors, especially in local government or in other spheres of government, one would ask yourself that when you look at the Northern Cape, there are three district municipalities that were able to get unqualified audit reports with no funding. What happens to shared services? Why the districts are not helping their local municipalities so that when you get the clean audit, it should affect the audit of the entire district municipality? Of course, where the report is saying that we have been stagnant for a very long time, when you look at the Limpopo report, Chair, we can't tell political leadership from time to time to make intervention, to support especially your provincial government. Why are they not, from now, at least doing an audit plan to say, this is how we are going to take the municipalities to move from point A to point B? Because if they are able to do that, and if the state government is not performing that is relevant, we might be able to take drastic steps against such as the legislature and also as parliament. Drastic steps to say that you have been on the train, you haven't moved it 10 years now. When are you going to move to the next step? I think that one we should do, but also commend those ones which have improved from their previous financial years. And also, the issue of assets in different municipalities, I'm not quite sure, but I fully agree with you. Business people, they see it as something that they will make money. You'll not be able to know what is happening. It's like the water tank business. They don't want to impart that particular skill to the people, of which it brings back to issue of lack of leadership. When you see these things happening, what do you do as a municipality? Lack of leadership. So, issue of asset management, it has been there years and years ago, and one thing that municipalities must begin to invest on critical skills that are critical to their municipality. You look at the level of your municipality. If I am in Dr. Kenneth Kaunda municipality, I will tell you the areas that I will look into, looking at also the economy of Dr. Kenneth Kaunda District Municipality and say, these are the type of skills that I'm going to invest in so that we can make our district better. You look at what you critically need and what you think will take the municipality forward. I'm not quite sure how many of our municipalities are using their skills development fund to improve or develop their municipalities. One would want to check on that. And the other issue that is of a problem, I think we need to introduce harsh measures in terms of performance so that what we must highlight to the community AG, it will be of performance. I think you are quite correct to say it's high time now we move a little bit from the finances, and because the critical issue, whether you have credible financial statements, but if you don't deliver services to the people in terms of the constitution, it therefore says we are failing. And how do we introduce harsh measures to push these ones that in terms of your audit, this is what we expect in terms of the performance. If we can improve on mechanisms that we are going to use in terms of performance and highlight it, because people, when they look at, when we look at, as politicians, when we look at the audit opinion that I have, I will then start to say that we have performed, we are the better. Can be, it's not like that. You still have to meet these two legs in terms of the accounting requirements. And lastly, Chair, also, the issue of employing those who are competent to do their work. We have been encouraging that there must be regulations in terms of a particular year. You need to have people who are very qualified in terms of the positions, and you need to employ people who are competent. I think it's high time whereby the employer should feel now that it's high time that we'll take drastic measures or steps against the incompetence of those who are tasked with the responsibility of ensuring that we move towards professionalizing our local government. If we are to, and municipality, you can't sit for a period of 3 years without your municipal managers, without your CFOs, unless there's a motivation or a move of you wanting to steal government resources. Because if you don't have people who take responsibility, that's where the irregularities are coming from. And I agree with the honourable member that AG, you have now you have a resources and you have the weapon to deal with all other issues, but not you alone, because your office will also be targeted. You'll be seen as the office, the Hawks office of sometimes. Maybe if we can increase powers and begin to talk to our committee, even Treasury, how do you approve a budget with no funding and for consistent years? I mean, 44% of your budgets in the country are being approved, adopted by council, they don't have funding. Where do they think they will take the money from? What are the alternative plans? I think we must get to the bottom of this. If the budget is unfunded, let it be rejected, not approved by council. And there will be time where you are allowed to make certain changes and look at the budget and areas where you can improve. That would be my submission. Mkhlonishwa, my chairperson, thank you very much.
All of you stay. And the court provides us hope of dealing with a number of things. Which would afford us when we summarize,
begin to identify key areas of action going forward on this matter. So thank you very much, Honourable Mokola, and Honourable Mokola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair, DAG, and the team members. Now, I'm going to be very brief, Chair. The reason being, like we all agree, the presentation by the AG was very elaborate, so she took a lot of my questions away, and which we really appreciate because it really assists in our work as we move forward. So thank you for the presentation. Maybe, Chair, let me start by agreeing with Honorable Singh, but differ again with him a little bit. I agree with him when he says the AG is actually doing much more than other stakeholders who are supposed to be moving local government forward. I just do not agree that we should enhance the power of the AG further, because in my view, it simply means that we are actually taking those responsibilities that are supposed to be carried by other institutions away from them, and allowing them to, what is that term, continue with the election of duty. So my view is that we should instead be saying in the event that you have a situation where Honorable Meho is saying a budget is passed and it's not funded, is there a way that COFTA, National Treasury, or Parliament can intervene? I know that legislatively it might be a challenge. So maybe instead of reviewing the legislation to enhance the powers of the AG, we rather look at how best can we review legislation that will allow greater access to the functioning and performance of a local government. I'm saying this, Chair, because if you were to call for the efforts that local government management or COFTA has put in order to recover lost funds or prevent further funds from being lost compared to the MI process that the AG is actually following, I doubt that they will even come close. So my suggestion would be that let's rather review the legislation that insulates the local government from accountability. Let me also agree with Honorable Lanzana, Chair, but also firm up what I think would have been a proposal from him, that some municipalities need to be identified, SCOWEC together with the AG, go and identify these municipalities, and we can request you, Chair, and the AG to lead that process for us, come back to the committee having identified those particular municipalities. Then we must undertake a on-site visit as a committee, and obviously supported by the AG in those visits, because we did raise this issue and the AG was willing to accompany us to be able to have a interaction with these municipalities. And maybe SAUDA could be invited as well as a lobby group for local government. A pointed question, Chair. On the issue of material misstatements, is there a way that you probe if whether this could have been a deliberate misstatement, that the information was passed on to yourselves knowingly that it is incorrect, in order, obviously, to mislead you and the public in terms of what the financial statement should reflect? And if there's any, what mechanisms are there to ensure that it doesn't happen again going forward? Another one, Chair, pointed, mechanisms in ensuring submissions of financial statements. I know there was an improvement on non-submissions, delayed submissions, and outstandings. So can we just be taken into your confidence if whether it's the process that you embark on to ensure that financial statements are submitted as required? Chair, I also agree with members who spoke about accountability from local government leadership. And when the AG was presenting and she kept on referring to leadership, I was worried that she's not touching on the political leadership, but eventually at the AG did, that you need strong political leadership as well. Because the Systems Act and the MFMA are very clear on statutory responsibility of the executive, particularly mayors, and they also speak on their financial management responsibility. Now, you have a situation where audits of this nature repeat themselves, or audit opinions repeat themselves. What is it that can be done? I'm not sure if that is a right question for you, AG, to ask, but to ensure that mayors also pull their weight in ensuring that the financial statements or the financial management culture in the local government is one that will have an impact of service delivery that one would seek to achieve as far as our constitutional responsibilities are concerned. Yeah, Chair, for now, let me pause there and again appreciate the opportunity to participate and a well-consolidated presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mutafa, for those identified areas of our intervention, which would formulate a package on what has been indicated by other
Sadie Barrier. On our conclusion, the last one is to speak.
Thank you, Jefferson. Greetings to yourself and our chair. Greetings to Met Batani Maluleka, DG, DHG. Greetings to the honorable members, our support team, Jefferson. Jefferson, I also wish to welcome and appreciate the presentation, its quality, and the fact that it's based on ethnographic, evidence-based research, unlike most institutions where they enjoy desktop and copy and paste. Also, Chaperson, the professionalism displayed, and how I wish I was a member, a full member of this committee, because where I am, we don't get to enjoy such in that tourism period.
Don't start.
Chaperson, yes, I also wish to appreciate the good work that is done by Meta Kane, mostly so in that she is the first female to be DG. That her work is aging. My apologies. AC, her work is much commendable, Chaperson. The AG's office is trying her utmost level best to ensure that they are professionalizing the local government and ensuring that there is stability and service delivery. And deal with the hindrances that are caused by instability, Chaperson. Chair, when you were appreciating the report, you did raise the fact that it is raising lots of critical elements, and indeed, Chair, I fully concur with you. The picture is gloomy, however, in the presentation, AG alluded to the fact that by working together, leverage the strength of all stakeholders, we can build resilient, responsive municipalities that deliver quality services and improve lives of all our people. And that, to me, gives me hope and also seconding what has been proposed by Honorable Marquess, that we as the portfolio committee, we need to support the office of the AG, ensure that we engage and play our oversight roles over the department of COFTA, even if we expand it, Honorable Chaperson, to involve all the MECs that we have in South Africa. Honorable Chaperson, the name responses Chaperson. But one, let me go to the point as where I think they need serious attention. The issue of Makana, Chaperson, it is a hotspot. There have been a number of protests, and recently there was one by the students of Rhodes on the state of their infrastructure, roads, and what is raised by the AG in terms of illegal dumping and the issue of water, Chaperson. It is indeed true, Chaperson, that the issue of instability, coalition, are a cause in some instances where you find that council are preoccupied and involved in power struggles more than their mandate, Chaperson. And also, Chaperson, on the issue that has to do with Nelson Mandela Metro, I'm biased, Chair, because I'm from there. Hopefully, with the newly appointed executive AG, we will be able to see improvements and stability as against what we find in the report. Also, on on the issue that has to do with the municipal billing system, Chair, and I so wish that we can get closer to the personnel and the complacency and the neglect, which is a cause for concern, Chairperson. Also, Chairperson, I so wished earlier I would have applauded the Office of the AG on the submission of financial statement improvement from 81% to 91%, Chairperson. Also applaud the Job Kabi District, Winnie Madikizela Mandela, for obtaining clean audits for two consecutive years, Chairperson. And hopefully others will also follow suit, Chairperson. Okay. On the issue that has to do with consultants, the overutilization of consultants, Chairperson, it's so unfortunate that our service providers are not developmental, instead they are profit-driven. However, Chairperson, I so wish to propose that in cases where there's lack of skills, can be allowed that the use of consultants, of course, with the transfer of skills and time frames for such. Also, where there are skills, let us try by all means not to allow the utilization of skills of consultants. Also, another element to this, Chairperson, is the fact that when there is CFO and the personnel, whether skilled or not, when there is an appointment of a consultant, let there be monitoring and clear oversight mechanism to ensure that they be able to be reporting on the work that they are doing. In some cases or in some instances, you find that they are not even doing the work, let alone that there are no submissions. It is based on the fact that they are doing nothing. They are just earning an income, honorable Chairperson. On the issue that has to do with consequence management, Chairperson, I'm glad that the Office of the AG has forwarded some of the cases to the SIU. However, Chairperson, my proposal is that we need to engage the Special Investigation Unit on those 14 cases and get updates as the Standing Committee Chair. I think let me address my case, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. One point that I forgot to raise is just a question. I believe while we are speaking, this report has passed through Cabinet. Can you maybe just share with us what opinion has been formed or communicated to yourself by Cabinet, and if whether there are any commitments in terms of how they think the situation can be remedied where it's necessary. Thank you, Chair.
Chair. Oh, Chairperson, Fulendo quality report, Chairperson, I am very much happy with the fact that they gave us a detailed presentation in the form of this booklet, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, they raise a lot of based on experience.
Okay. Yeah. No. I think colleagues, you have highlighted areas which would need the AG probably to provide some brief responses on some of those. And others are contained in the detailed report. And in your own observation, some of the matters have been deliberated upon in terms of the presentation earlier on. What is coming up, even before you say so, AJ, is the area that relates to our role in this committee is a purely defined as a role which is on the protective nature of the Office of the Auditor General's independence. We have to create that assurance capability that indeed there's been a sense of independence there. Secondly, the security, maximum security around the actual performance in as far as that audit environment is concerned, and would outline some key instruments which are going to assist the Office of the Auditor General to perform its own work, whether you're talking about the tariff environment, you're talking about financing, you're talking about areas of skilling and capacity, and that kind of a packaged related areas are the areas which are pointed at the Office of the Auditor General. That office has finalized its own work in as far as MFMA is concerned. Then we receive and certify that kind of work. You have made your comments around such. Critical areas which have been outlined by the AG are the areas that relate to the fulfillment of that system. You see, in terms of accountability in the course of that office doing its own work. If the provincial offices are not collaboratively looking into that kind of work, the Office of the Premier, the Office of Culture, the Office of Treasury, are working closely with municipalities in the fulfillment of the actual performance of municipalities, the Office of the Auditor General is going to make findings which are clearly closer to the failure of doing so. Because the legislatures pass some kind of funding through to municipalities. If you don't follow that, if you don't somewhat look into monitoring such performance, there are going to be problems. The Office of the Auditor General highlights the fact that if you look into the failure of planning as a primary informing occurrence for success, if it's not there, you wake up in the morning, you do that, you choose not to do it, you do that one, and even if you have adopted that budget is not a cash-based budget. Is a budget which is not fulfilling the actual plan of the municipality. Why do you have a budget of that nature? And the responsibility of the treasuries at the provincial level and the coopers there in terms of the approval of such and not necessarily approval to certify such budgets. You know, if the budget is not fully funded, how would you allow the municipality to operate in that environment? You know, at a provincial and national level, a department which fails to meet that standard is given a limited timeline to have some implementation of their own financial performance. And such limitations are very strict. Why such limitations are not there at the local government level? You know, because I know that nationally, provincially, you can't spend beyond a particular limit in terms of month or so. And then thereafter, if you can't produce a credible information, you can't, as an accounting officer, continue spending. You know, it becomes illegal. why at a municipal level that instrument is not actually at the time of fulfillment. The AG talks about use of consultants. I think these things should not be as if we're saying don't use consultants. There's absolutely no blanket statement around such. What the AG says, there's some deficiency where consultants are used. I don't know how they would accept that responsibility if right through the years there's been no clear performance of the chief financial officer in tracking up documentation. And so where are you going to get documents if you are employed as a consultant to do that work? So that itself falls to that consultant, which accepts that kind of responsibility when they know that whatever they do in terms of stretching up information, they're not going to be able to find it, you know, and then they throw in some invoices for them to be paid at the end of the day. Realization of the key performance area to finalize that work is neither here nor there. And the second area around that is a question of debts. And debts, sessionable debts. We use consultants to claim that for that claimant. You have the CFO who is in that office. That is the primary responsibility of that CFO to do so. You know, that's a very basic kind of work. You know, but you appoint a consultant which claims exorbitantly on the very same refunds which you ought to benefit from and use them in terms of the actual municipal performance. It's criminal. It's criminal. The AG is sound around that that factor, and if LDCs know, they should act on that. In some kind of collaborative exercise, they must somewhat find a way of acting around those areas. So our view is not saying, no, don't use a consultant, will be one thing strictly correct around it. But we're saying consultants don't take chances. Otherwise you are accomplished in a way in as far as wrongdoing at the municipal level. We have made available propositions which we have to somewhat find time to look at them and be able to say this is what we, the MIs which are somewhat increasingly going into the indication of what needs to be attended to. But AG, you audit based on what Treasury from time to time provide some issuances in as far as notices you see at that level. It might be that some of those notices would need our engagements as a committee, Treasury and yourself. I'm looking into this thing which relates to the growth on irregularities and the movement around such, whether I look into the wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, and the issuance of some directives which fly against that kind of necessity to have a critical outlook on those kinds of matters. And if there's a growth of such in terms of irregular expenditure, wasteful, fruitless expenditure, why would you hide that kind of expense away from the glare of the audit and remain in the financials or in the annual report, not on the financial statement? So those are the kind of things which you must continue to deliberate on between yourself and the AG. Because that is robbing us in terms of the total outlook of things that we need to attend to, whatever
there is somewhat a goal. So the reference would be on note 4, and probably the challenge that it would pose in as far as the actual performance of these kinds of bodies going forward. So treasury must come to party around what we see to enable the performance of government overall and its own capacity for protect fully. So back to you, AG, on the error that have been covered by colleagues here. Taking strength to the proposal that have been made, we are talking about the meeting between Treasury, Co-opter, we're looking into visiting some municipalities, and I take it that you have to make some reference as well, probably meeting some provincial departments. You were saying Mpumalanga is one area where there's some form of attendance one way or the other. Maybe we might want to get closer together with the office of the AG into that kind of environment. AG?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and the Honourable Members of COAG for your input, your observations, and your questions. I won't be able to deal with all of the questions now. I think I can easily guide you to some of the spaces in the audit report, and I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to engage, especially given that the law requires that I table with you the MI report. So in a little while, we'll compile a full report on the material irregularities, and we'll come and talk you through all of those as we did for PFMA. But thank you once again for the compliments, the very kind compliments issued to me and to the team at ADSA, and I'll make sure that the team that has worked so hard on this product gets the feedback. I want to thank the Honourable Members of SCOAG, led by yourself, Honourable Chair, for the support that you continue to provide us. And in a little while, the Deputy Auditor General will be engaging with yourselves on our funding model and what we need from a capacity point of view, so I'll allow him to do so at the appropriate time. I want to agree with your observations, Honourable Members, that fixing local government is going to take all of us working together. And given the provincial leadership, the national leadership, all of us really engaged with working with local government as institutions, municipalities as institutions, to right the wrong. We've been inspired, as I said before, by the ownership that we're seeing being taken at the provincial level and at the national level. The National Treasury has done phenomenal work around the framework, but also importantly around finding ways to monitor these unfunded budgets and push back against that. So there is some traction on that. I know that was raised as an issue, as well as guiding on financial recovery plans. But I think clearly we need to all do a lot more. So we would welcome the opportunity, Chair, to engage with the Honourable Members of SCOAG on what else we can do together, looking at the auditees and provincial and local government. I think a visit to municipalities, whether they are in the clean audit zone, would help, because you get a feel for what sort of insights you've been able to offer them. And you know, even this idea of what does it look like to operate in a clean audit environment. We've been able to visit Handa, which is in the Northern Cape, and we get a feel for what is it, what makes up for a clean audit team. It's discipline. The feedback our teams give us, they say, look, when we go there, you can sense there's order, you know, and it's quite clear. And does it mean things are perfect? No, but there's responsiveness, and that's what counts. And when we go to Winnie Madikizela Mandela, they tell us about how they deal with the budget, and your observation is absolutely spot on. That's how a municipality ought to function. There must be attendance to looking at financial resources and public participation demands that are raised there, and then match that to the capacity of the municipality, and then deliver, and then also communicate effectively. That's what builds trust among citizens. So I think a visit to some of the good performers, and visit us up at some of the ones that are complacent in the yellow zone, I think would be good, because some of them really can be nudged to move into the right area. We've got to start shifting our expectations of what a public institution ought to look like, and then a visit to the ones that are lagging behind, and also looking at the role of local and provincial governments. I'll end off my input really by saying, Honourable Chair, the story is still about leadership. political leadership and leadership at the administration level. It is leadership that sets the tone, that chooses to professionalize or not, that chooses to drive delivery or not, that chooses to implement consequences or not, that acts on our report as AGFA or not. And the choice that we all have to make is about driving local government in the right direction. It's going to take firm decisions that are really about building and rebuilding these institutions so that they deliver for the long term. The matters around documents, the matters around skills, the matters around MIs, those things, are, in my view, are best dealt with when you've got a posture of leadership that's more inclined to do the right thing rather than not. We've engaged all of the stakeholders, Honourable Matapa, at the provincial and national government, and some of their inputs and commitments have been included in the report, and others will come in due course. The invitation, Chair, for us to engage on the matters around how we deal with the irregular expenditure framework, I think it's a good thing. We've had time over 20 years now to implement the PFMA and the MFMA to implement these irregular framework, irregular expenditure frameworks. We as auditors, public institutions as implementers, and National Treasury as a standard setter. I think it's a good thing for us to engage on how do we augment, improve, align those instruments so that at the end of the day, we safeguard transparency and accountability, because that's what's important. So we would welcome that engagement at the appropriate time. But once again, Honourable Chair and members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to dialogue in this way. I do hope you'll enjoy this report as much as we've enjoyed working with it and delivering it. It is sad news, but we as teenagers, they tend to look for every opportunity to drive the right sort of behaviour and to look forward. This moment is a tough one. The news is difficult to contend with, but it's also yet another reminder of the urgency with which we all must engage with our duties. Thank you very much.
That's the story. So it's moving to be the Auditor General's story, to be our story. And if it's our story, we need to outline our plan to use the story to assist us going forward. We have made brilliant proposals which would find time to look into and problematize our approach in response to the report as tabled today. In appreciation, we really want to thank the Office of the Auditor General. The work itself is onerous, and the outcome is something that we need to weigh and be able to move to create a benefit of some kind. So thanks to you and your team for the fulfillment of that kind of responsibility. We are looking forward into the next journey of your team to get back to us on the PFMA outcomes, because there's absolutely no resting. So there's a continuum of some kind. We really appreciate the fact that now you have gone deeper to look into the performance. That's not an outlook that if this sport field has been done, where is it? How has it been done? And the quality of products which have somewhat used the value for money. Something which you were always pleading for. I think the Honorable Singh would be very happy that a legacy is being plowed around that kind of scenario. An angle which is very much appreciable is that for us, we have heard the members here. What is key is to drive collaboration
You see, from this, how can we make it treasury, make it culture, and look into those key critical stakeholders so that we can take this report forward and make it of value to improve what is actually happening coming the next time. You can build the skills. You can succeed in doing so. But the instability at the local level is a major, problem. So professionalism becomes key. So colleagues might be right to say we can as well engage with the School of Governance to create some kind of a professional outlook which ought to be developed at that level. But these things are there. We succeeded to have CFOs to be trained on a different model in terms of the modules which were required for them to perform certain skills. We need now to see whether that has assisted them or not. You see, talking about the electric team, all that stuff. And is a problem there, or is a problem somewhere else? And if leaders fail, how can they be made accountable? I think Honorable Nahua has made a point that there will be a stage when those who are responsible for such leader at that level must take responsibility. And therefore we must go and enjoy some kind of a pointer which takes us into that kind of a direction. We're always open, we're always here to provide that assistance without interfering with your work at the office, but to give necessary form of a cover as per the constitution of the country and the legislation which is in place currently. So thank you very much again for the report. Honorable Matafa asked that you have tabled this report to us now, but before this time you have made some consultation with a number of people and you have met the cabinet and what has been the view of cabinet in as far as the report is concerned. You know, the cabinet minutes are cabinet minutes. You are not a cabinet facility. You are the office of the Auditor General. So let's keep it there. At that level. But there will be time to ask the responsible minister. When you see these kinds of this kind of a product, what do you see? So we have that responsibility, and therefore we use it to have that kind of a platform to deal with these matters. I always remind people about this. The Office of the Auditor General is a Chapter 9 institution. As a Chapter 9 institution, it must always be protected to advance its own sense of independence and operation without prejudice, fear, and they must always remain independent in terms of their work. It's our responsibility to protect you to do so. So we are somewhat empowered to follow that kind of responsibility. We are members of Parliament, and as members of Parliament, well, an added entry to collaborate with other committees and slide our views within those committees so that they should, when they add, they will have our views in a way within our own limitations. To you and your team, thank you very much. Honorable colleagues, thank you so much for the areas that you have raised, the insight in those matters. We're going to find time to even look further into the actionable areas which are concerning us.
the immediate action is to go to these colleges. We are going to do that. We are going to link already with the college unit and so that we can find a way to get there. To the support teams, thank you so much. Keep on supporting the officer of the general and those who support us, keep on supporting us. To the media, you have heard that make these news worthy and make those who hear them to commit into the fact that since you have heard it, heard them, you are remained just according in my language. So make us to commit as such. So there's a call on you. So you must make our government work properly, and just do that together. So be the voice to take these things further. The Office of the Auditor General is available, the AG is available, they will deal with those things. In the political environment, we're there to assist around other matters. That's the difference between red, white, and other things. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. I'm advised that there is lunch.